in Medrash says the following. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Bo'oz chatasi, I sin with the word oz, u'bo'oz ani misakein, and I will correct my sin with the word oz too. Where did he sin with the word oz? Back in the end of Parsha Shmos. It says, may oz, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Ribbono Shel Olam after his mission to Paro seems to be very unsuccessful, and Paro makes things worse for the Jews, and Moshe comes with a complaint. Lama harayosa la'am hazeh, lama zeh shlachtoni. Why'd you do bad to these people? Why'd you send me? Umei oz bosi el Paro v'daber b'shmecha, from the time that I came to Paro to speak in your name, heira la'am hazeh, things got worse for these people, v'hatzeh lo itzalta samecha, and you didn't save them. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's sin. Seemingly that he complained, questioned God. How did he correct the sin with the word oz? Shenemar oz yashir Moshe. By the Shira, he used again the word oz. There's two major questions here. The first question is, if you had to pick a word from those two sentences of Moshe Rabbeinu's complaint against God to symbolize the sin, again, I'll tell you the sentences, what they say. Tell me which word you would pick to be the symbol. Lama hariyoso la'am hazeh, lama zeh shlachtoni, u'me'oz bosi el paro l'daber b'shmecha, heira la'am hazeh, v'hatzeh lo hitzalto esamecha. Those are the two sentences. What word would you pick to symbolize the sin? Lama. Yeah, no, it's the first word, and it really captures the thing. Why? Who are you to question me? Would you pick the word oz? May oz bosi el paro? It's the beginning of the second sentence. It doesn't seem to have any context to be the sin. May oz bosi el paro. So Moshe says, I sin with the word oz. Why is that the symbol of the sin? And the second part's also difficult. Moshe said, therefore I'm going to correct it with the word oz. Moshe didn't say oz yashir Moshe. The Torah said that. Moshe started with Ashiro Hashem. So how did Moshe correct it with the word oz? He didn't say it. And how did he sin with the word oz? There are many words before that, and it would seem like the word that would capture the sin would be lama. So I'm going to tell you two answers. The first answer, both of them are my idea, so if you don't like them, it's okay, and you can question it. The first one is the following. Real emuna and bitachon means that you believe that everything that happens in the world happens because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it to happen. Nothing happens in this world by accident. And therefore, even the most terrible things that appear to be bad, really, if you see the whole picture, they're really for the good. Except we don't see the whole picture. And when you only see a portion of the picture, you can distort things and see things in a very negative way. I'll give you some mishalim. Thank you. So I'll give you some mishalim. Imagine walking into the following scene. You see a masked man with a knife ready to cut off somebody's leg. So you assume this is a terrorist attack, and you want to be brave, so you knock out the masked man, and you drag the victim to safety, and you feel you're going to get a real, you know, hero's welcome. The guy looks up at you and says, why did you do that? Why did you burst into the operating room, knock out the doctor who was ready to amputate my leg because he said I had gangrene, and if he didn't amputate my leg immediately, I was going to die. Now you killed me. Why did you take me out of the operating room and knock out my doctor? So because you didn't see the whole picture, you assume what was happening was a terror attack when really it was an act of mercy. It was an operation. Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich says that in the Gemara, the Torah compares the Ribbono Shel Olam to an artist. Ein tsur kelokeinu, Chana said in her tefillah. And the Gemara says, ein tsayer kelokeinu. There's no artist like God. And he explains in the following way, how is God such a great artist? He says, if you tell a kindergarten child to draw the picture of a person, so what does he do? He draws a circle, that's the head, a line down, that's the body, two lines out are arms, two lines down are legs, two dots are eyes, dot for a nose, big smile, you're finished. You know exactly what he's drawing every step along the way. But if you tell Rembrandt to paint the same picture, he doesn't draw a big circle. He dabs a little red paint and then a little black paint on the canvas. Somebody who knows nothing about art will say, Rembrandt, you just ruined this canvas. Red paint, black paint. I'll bring you another canvas, get started with the circle, and let's get finished. Rembrandt will say, this painting's going to take me 6 months. Have a seat, have patience. If you have any questions when it's finished, be glad to answer. Until then, keep your mouth shut. So Rembrandt's going to paint this picture. And what's going to be in the end of the 6 months? You're going to see that the red was for contrast and the black was for a shadow and everything fit perfectly into the picture, but you couldn't really see it till you see the whole thing. We don't see the whole picture. We see a very small portion of what's going on right now. It could be that in the scheme of things, you would see that things are work out all for the good. You know, the Chafetz Chaim says we have a precedent for that. Achei Yosef. Yosef's brother saw a lot of things happening to him they didn't understand. And two words, in the end, answered all their questions. Ani Yosef. So, too, we see a lot of things in this world we don't understand, but in the end, two words will answer all the questions. Ani Hashem. And you don't see the end in this world either. You don't see the whole picture. The whole picture is eternity. So what happens in this world may appear to be bad. Somebody dies tragically, but Lamaisa, for their neshama, for all time, that could be the best thing that happened to them. You know, remember Chanoch? I don't think you remember him personally, but he lived way back in the beginning of the world, and he died at the tender young age of 365, when everybody else was living to be 900. That means, proportionate to today, he died probably in his late 20s. And all these people were mourning him. Oh, he never, 365, didn't get a chance to start his life. Such a young guy. But we know why he died at 365. Because he was a tzaddik gomer, and he lived in a generation of Rishoyim, before the Mabul, and HaKadosh Baruch was afraid that if he lived another 600 years, he would die not a tzaddik gomer. He would be a little tainted. And because he took him away early as a tzaddik gomer, he converted his neshama into the greatest malach that exists. And if Chanoch would have lived another 600 years, he never would have had that eternal benefit of being that malach. So in his eternal good, it was good to be taken away that time. It was good for him. But we didn't see it. We only see what's in front of us. We saw a young man, 365-year-old man, die. Terrible tragedy. So in order to be able to see the world properly, you have to be able to believe that there's a bigger picture than you can see, and somehow in that bigger picture, everything is for the good. If that's the case, then Moshe Rabbeinu's sin was the following. Let's take the first pasuk. Lama hariyosa, lama zeh, lama zeh shlachtani. Was that a sin? No. What happens when sorrows happen to a person? When things happen that are not good, are you just supposed to say, well, everything's for the good, so that's great? Or what are you supposed to do when you experience Yisurim, Tzaris? It says, Yifash Beish B'maisa. There's a reason why the good is happening in a way that's bitter, that hurts. Why couldn't God bring that good in a positive way? The answer is that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to somehow wake you up, and something, this is correcting something that needs to be corrected. So when a person has tzaris and yisurim, he shouldn't ignore it. He should ask, lama. Lama doesn't mean why, madua, intellectually. I don't understand God, explain it to me. That's not the question. Lama means for what purpose? Lama. Why am I going through this? What can I gain from it? What can I learn from it? What does God want to tell me? He's sending me a message. What's the message? So when Moshe Rabbeinu, after things got bad for Klal Yisrael, and he said, Lama hariyosa, lama zeh, lama zeh shlachtani, that was no sin. That's what you're supposed to do. Ask, for what purpose did you do bad to these people? Why is it happening bitter? Nothing is bad, but a lot of things are bitter. The bad, the good can happen in a sweet way, or it can happen in a bitter way. That's why on Rosh Hashanah we wish each other a shana tova umesuka, a good and sweet year, because every year is good. Everything's good. But it's not sweet. So why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending me these bitter things? There must be a reason. There must be something I can learn from it. That's lama. For what purpose? Lama. For what purpose did you do bad to these people now? Why is it appear to us bad? Why is it bitter? Why are we suffering? Why'd you send me? For what purpose? That was no sin. That's exactly how a person has to react to tzoras. What Moshe's sin was, may oz basio paro. He took an oz, a moment, and he froze it in time. And he judged it just on what he saw in front of him and didn't realize that you have to put it into the perspective of eternity. So taking an oz, a moment, and freezing it and judging it totally disassociated from everything before it and after it, that's what's wrong. You can't look at the world like that. You have to realize you're only seeing a fragment. You're only seeing a portion of the picture. And it's only if you understand that there's a greater picture than you see, can you understand intellectually that maybe what you see appears to be bad, but it really fits into a plan that's really for the good. Kadosh Baruch was the ultimate artist. He's painting a panorama of history. And we only see a small portion. You can't ask questions from the small portion. You have to have emunah and bitachon that somehow it fits into a major eternal plan. That was Moshe's sin. Oz. He took an oz and he isolated it. He froze it and judged it totally disassociated from what came before and what comes was going to come after. How did he correct that? Later on, when Moshe Rabbeinu sang the Shira, he didn't sing it because at that moment it appeared to be good. But the Torah says he took that moment, Oz, Yashir Moshe, and he put it into perspective to the future, Ad Tchias HaMeisim, till the end of time. I'm not thanking God for what happened right now. I'm putting it into the perspective of eternity and thanking him because somehow this fits in. Not only right now is it good, but it's going to be good for all eternity. So Oz Yashir Moshe. He took the Oz and he projected it into the future. That's what the Torah says Moshe did when he said Oshir El Hashem. That's how he corrected the sin. The sin was that he isolated an Oz, and the Torah tells us that by the Shira, he didn't take the Oz and treat it as an isolated thing, but he projected it till Tchias HaMeisim. That's one way of understanding this Medrash. Any questions on this? If not, I'll tell you a second way. The second way of understanding the Medrash, yes? What? No, it wasn't said. The Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu sang his Shira, right, he did it in a way that he didn't sing it only for that moment, because right now it looks good for Klal Yisrael. But he projected it to the future. So the Torah tells us, Oz Yashir, Moshe sang now, but he projected to the future. So that's how he corrected it. And when he said Ashir El Hashem, he projected that Oz into the future. He didn't correct it by saying the word Oz. He corrected it by, before he isolated an Oz, now he took an Oz and put it into, what's it called, into the perspective of eternity. Okay. Another pshat. In order to understand this pshat, we have to start with another question. Right before Kriyas Yamsuf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'yiso. No need to daven right now, just tell the Bnei Yisrael to move on into the sea. Why? Rashi says, Kidayom zechusam, their merit, that they followed me into the desert and believed me, v'schus avosam, and the merit of their forefathers, is enough that the sea is going to split for them. Don't worry, everything's okay, no need to daven now. Just let them go through the sea. They have enough schus that the sea is going to split. And then there's another Rashi right after that. It says, V'hamayim lohem choma miminom mismolam. And the word choma is spelled without a vav. You can read it chema, anger. That the whole night there was a judgment in heaven whether the Jewish people should survive or be drowned because they were of the Avodah Zarah. And the Malach of Mitzrayim said, why should these people be saved? They're over the Avodah Zarah just as much as the Mitzrayim. So all night the Jewish people were in judgment whether they should be saved or not. Maybe they were going to drown. Now that seems to contradict what the first Rashi says. First Rashi says, no problem. The sea's going to split for them. And then Rashi says that whole night there was a big shaila whether they were going to survive or not. So was the sea going to split for them because they had enough schos, or was it Rashaila? Which one is it? The answer, I think, is, or one answer possibly, is the following. Kriyas Yamsuf had three distinctive parts to it that weren't necessarily dependent one on the other. One is that the sea split. The second is that the Jews went through. And the third was that the Egyptians drowned. All of those three things happened independently and were not interdependent one on the other. In other words, it was possible that the sea wouldn't split altogether. It's possible the sea would split and the Jews wouldn't go through. It's possible the sea would split and the Jews would go through and the Egyptians wouldn't be drowned. Each thing was a separate thing. How do I know that? Because both in the Tehillim, Kuf Lamed Vav, Hodu Lashem Kitov, it mentions each of these things separately, and in the Dayenu, it says it separately. Right? It says, L'gozer Yamsuf L'gzorim Kili Olam Chazdo. V'hever Yisrael B'solcho Kili Olam Chazdo. Right? And what does it say over there? V'nir Paro V'chelu B'yamsuf Kili Olam Chazdo. Three separate things. The Dayenu also. Ilu Koralano Sayam V'lo Heviranu B'solcho B'charava Dayenu. Ilu Heviranu B'solcho B'charava V'lo Shika Sereno Dayenu. Three separate things. What does that mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show once in history, in front of the entire world, that he created the world. The first part of creation that really had to do with people was the formation of dry land. That's where people have a base on dry land, can't exist in the sea. So when God parted the waters by Brias HaOlam and made dry land, he was preparing the way for human beings. And nobody saw that. Nobody witnessed that. So the Rabban Shalom said, one time in history, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to part the waters and make dry land for people that I want to have a standing in this world, a place to exist. And that would prove to the world, Kriyas Yamsuf is something the whole world saw. It says that what inspired Yisro to come and join the Jewish people? Kriyas Yamsuf was one of the things. Shomu Amim Yirgozim, the whole world heard about it. So the Rabbanu Shel Olam wanted to put on a big show and show to the world that he created the world. That was Kriyas Yamsuf. Now that had nothing to do with the Jewish people going through. Because if someone were to ask you, why did the Jews cross the Red Sea? You know what the answer to that question is not? To get to the other side. That is not the answer to the question. Because they never got to the other side. They made a U-turn. In fact, there's even a picture in the Gemara. And Tosfos has a picture of the U-turn in Gemara and Erechin. The Jews went into the sea, made a U-turn, came back on the same side. They didn't have to get to the other side. So there was no purpose of splitting the Red Sea so the Jews could get to the other side. So the fact that the sea split had nothing to do necessarily with the Jews getting to the other side. Separate thing is that the Rabban Shalom let us go through the sea and we didn't get drowned in it. We weren't punished. We survived. And the third thing is that the Egyptians, Taka, were punished. And therefore, the Rabban Shalom said like this, I am going to split the sea in the merit of the Jewish people. They have the merit that they're going to be the ones to cause this tremendous show and bring the world to a possibility of emuna. That's a tremendous chus. Whether they're going to survive it or not is not clear yet. They may die in the process. May they make a drown too. But at least they went out with a bang. They died and have brought the whole world to a certain degree of emuna, right? And the it's not just us that believe in Kriyas Yamsuf. All the Muslims believe in it. All the Christians believe in it. It's part of their Bible too, Kriyas Yamsuf. So a good portion of the world believe in this. And I remember once I had a woman came to convert. And the first question I ask somebody who tells me they want to convert is, what religion are you now and why are you not happy with your own religion? So she told me she's Catholic, and there are things that Catholicism forces them to believe, which she just can't swallow. She can't believe it. So I expect that I asked her, could you give me an example of one of those things that Catholicism forces you to believe in that you can't believe? And I thought she would say that a man could be God or, you know, whatever. So she said, yeah, like the splitting of the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. I said, I hate to tell you this, but we were the ones who went through the Red Sea. She said, you guys believe in that too? I said, yeah, and so do the Muslims, so don't try to become a Muslim either. So a good portion of the world believes in Kriyas Yam Suf. So Klal Yisrael, that's what it says. They have enough merit that the sea's going to split in their honor, and they're going to have that schus la dore doros. But whether they're going to survive or not is still a shaila. The whole night there was a din, whether they would survive or not. They were in the middle of the sea. The question is the sea going to come and drown them, or are they going to go through? And then there was a separate thing that the Egyptians drowned in the sea. And in fact, if you think about it, what do we say in davening? It says, the Yam Suf Bakata, the Zedim Tibata, the Yedidim Hevarta, Vayechasu Mayim Tzorehem, Echad Mehem Lo Nosor. Listen again, if it should have bothered you, I don't know why it never bothered me until I really thought about it, and according to what I just told you now, it makes a lot of sense. Listen to what it says. Yam Suf Bakata, you split the Red Sea. The Zedim Tibata, and the wicked ones you drowned. And then the Yedidim Hevarta, and your beloved ones you made go through. That's not the order. The Egyptians didn't drown till we went through. We went through, then the Egyptians came, and they were drowned. So why does it say, Zedim Tibata, and then Yedidim Hevarta? It should have said, the Yedidim Hevarta, the Zedim Tibata. Secondly, it repeats it again. Vayachas umayim tzoreihem, echad mehem lo nosar. That the waters covered up their enemies. It said that before, Zedim Tibata. The answer is no. That's not what happened. What happened was the Yam Suf split. And then Zedim is talking about the Jews. The Jews who were Ovdei Avodah Zarah were in danger of being drowned. That's called Tibata. Tibata doesn't necessarily mean they drowned, actually. But they were in the water with the water over them. That's called drowning. A person can be drowning and be saved. They were drowning. They were in the midst of the sea, and the question was, were they going to get out or not? So what were they doing drowning? So you split the sea, Zedim Tibata, you put them in the midst of the sea, and they were in danger of drowning, basically drowning, not dead. And then you decided the Yedidim Hevarta that they should cross, and Vayachasu Maim Tzareh, then the Egyptians were drowned. But until now, we're talking only about the Jews. And the Jews originally were drowning in the sea. Eventually, they got out of the sea. So that is how Kriyas Yam Suf developed. Now let's go back to Moshe Scheit. Again, like we said, Lama Hare Oso Lama Zeh, that's not a sin. To question, why is this happening to me? What can I learn from it? What am I supposed to do? For what purpose? That's not a sin, yeah? What?
Didn't they have like full moon on Hashem?
Yeah, they did, but they didn't leave their Avodah Zarah completely, and also they deserve to be punished for maybe they didn't do tshuva completely either yet. So there still were Jews that maybe left their Avodah Zarah, but their tshuva wasn't complete. Or their tshuva was because they were impressed with all the miracles or whatever and didn't really do it from their own heart. And then, in any case, God agrees with you. Because in the end, they went through. They weren't trapped, but there was a child. Yeah.
Hashem really wanted to destroy them?
Obviously not, right? But there was a chance.
I mean, the fact that they, there was probably a question of,
It could be some would have been saved. Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have been drowned. Aaron wouldn't have been drowned.
The fact they went in wouldn't put them, right?
What?
The fact that they had a moon to go into the...
Yeah, that was what's called enough to split the sea. It wasn't enough necessarily to save them from drowning. Right? They had... Tremendous Amunah, and because of that, they got the schus of inspiring the world. More than that, maybe not. And in the end, it's all academic because they all were saved. So obviously, the Rebbe Hashem felt that all these things were enough to save them too. But there was a place of kitrug, right, that maybe they didn't deserve it. Okay. Now, let's go back to Moshe's scheit. His scheit, like we said, was not the first pasuk. Lama hariyosu lama zeh, lama zeh shlachtani. It's not a scheit. You're supposed to ask, For what purpose? What am I supposed to learn from this? Whatever. So his chait was, me'oz basi al paro. What is that? The chait was the following. Moshe said, you know, from the time I came to Paro, nothing good came out of this. All you did is make it worse for the Jewish people, and you didn't save them. God turned to Moshe and he said, nothing good came out of this? You know, years before, when Yosef was the second in command of Mitzrayim, my name was mentioned in Paro's court all the time. Paro himself said, what God, revealed this to you, there's no greater chacham than Yosef. Right? Paro constantly mentioned God over and over and over again. Right? In the parsha of Yosef and the dream with Paro, Paro keeps mentioning Elohim. God, and Yosef mentioned God, and Paro mentions God. For 210 years in Mitzrayim, God said, my name hasn't been mentioned in Mitzrayim at all. They forgot about me. Paro said, me Hashem, I don't know this God. I know me, I'm God. I don't know any God. God was forgotten completely. All of a sudden, Moshe and Aaron come into Paro's palace, and there's already a debate about God. Already God's name is being mentioned. And Paro has to answer, and God said this, and God said that. There's already a Kiddush Hashem. For 210 years, God's name has not been mentioned in Paro's court. You know, after the Six-Day War, which for you is history, but for me was current events, that's when you know you're old, when your children are learning in history what you saw as current events. But in any case, I was not that old. I was just out of high school during the Six-Day War, and it really was a miraculous thing. I mean, before the war, the Arabs were threatening to kill every Jew in Eretz Israel and throw him into the sea, and it didn't look like there was any hope. And all of a sudden, the first day of the war, the Israeli army destroyed all the Arabs' air forces of all these Arab nations, and they were on the way to Cairo, on the way to Damascus. If the Americans didn't stop us, there'd be no Middle Eastern problem, because Egypt and Syria and Lebanon all would have been Israel. But in any case, it was tremendous miracles. Ad kedei kach, I remember, I was learning in Tells at the time, and one of the miracles of the war was that during Bein HaSdorim, they allowed us to listen to radios to hear what was going on in the war. That was maybe the greatest miracle of the war, that they allowed us to listen to radios then. In any case, so I remember listening to the radio, Bein HaSdorim, and there was a BBC correspondent who was on the war, on the battlefield. And I remember him saying the following with tremendous emotion. He said that there are miracles going on here. It's unbelievable what's happening, how these Jews are overrunning these Arab armies. He said this is obviously a war between God and Allah, and God's knocking the heck out of Allah. That's what he said. That was a Goyish English correspondent. That was just the Six-Day War. After the Six-Day War, so they had debates in the UN about a ceasefire. We're going to give up land, not give up land, keep parts of the land, whatever. So it was broadcast all over the world, these UN debates. The whole world was watching. And the Arabs would get up and speak about Allah this and Allah that and Allah and Allah. And Abba Ibn, who was the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, never mentioned God's name. So my Rosh Hashiva of Gifter Zatzal sent Abba Ibn a letter. And he said to him, you have a chance now to really be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Don't let the world think that only the Arabs have a God. We also have a God. Why don't you mention God's name and the fact that God gave us a victory here or whatever, and attribute this to God? So he got a letter back on official Israeli State of Israel stationery. It is the official policy of the State of Israel not to mention God's name publicly. They're probably very afraid that they'll say it not the right place, the right time, Lashav, and therefore they're big machmer, and they don't want to say God's name ever, whatever the reason is. But tremendous Kiddush Hashem. For 210 years, God's name wasn't mentioned in Mitzrayim, and all of a sudden, Moshe and Aaron and Paro are debating and talking about God. So God said, what do you say, Me'oz Basi El Paro, from the time you went to Paro, nothing good happened? Don't you consider the Kiddush Hashem something? Okay, it didn't work out for the Jewish people. They didn't get any benefit. But isn't the Kiddush Hashem also a benefit? That was Moshe's sin. How could you say that nothing good happened from this when there was a little bit of a Kiddush Hashem? My name, at least, was mentioned in Paro's palace for 210 years it wasn't. How did Moshe correct that sin? When it came to singing the Shira for Kriyas Yamsuf, when did Moshe decide to sing the Shira? After the Jews were saved, or before they were saved, when it's possible they would drown, but the sea split? So the Torah tells us, Oz Yashir Moshe. Then he sang. And Rashi says, when he saw the miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea, Moshe decided already to sing. Even though it wasn't clear that the Jews were going to make it out. It was possible that they would have all drowned. But the fact that the sea split and the whole world saw that there's a God was kedai to sing for, even if the Jewish people wouldn't benefit anything from it, even if they'd all drown. Oz Yashir Moshe. He didn't wait to see if the Jews would make it through and then sing. But he already decided to sing before that when he saw the sea split. That was the kapara. That was the tikkun. Before, he only saw the benefit to the Jewish people as being a benefit. And the Kiddush Hashem he didn't take in consideration. And here by Yam Suf, he saw the Kiddush Hashem, and even if the Jews would not benefit at all, they'd all be drowned. Still, it was kedai to sing. So he decided to sing, not when he waited to see if the Jews would survive. He decided to sing. He didn't sing till the end. But he decided to sing at the moment he saw the Nes, because the Kiddush Hashem was worth singing about, even if it didn't benefit Klal Yisrael at all. Now, Shane came in the beginning, he made a mistake to think that if it didn't benefit Klal Yisrael, then what have to sing about? What kind of benefit is there? He discounted the fact that there was a Kiddush Hashem, despite the fact that it didn't benefit the Jewish people at the time. That was the tickle. Any questions on this? Okay, yeah. They were 37th of Tumba. Right. That is a drash. The pashit is that they were on the 49th level of Tumah, and if he didn't take them out right away, they would have sunk and been impossible to redeem. That's what the pashit pshat is. There is such a pshat, I don't remember who says it, what you just said. But they were, according to all the midrash and whatever, the Jews were on the low level, and had God taken them, not taken them out, they would have sunk to the lowest level and never been able to be taken out. That was the thing.